I'd like to acknowledge my elders. I am my mob. My story starts in March of 98 when I was notified by the Wollongong Police Station of a skull protruding out of a sand dune at Macaulay's Beach at Sandon Point. At that time, I was the chair of this land council, but also a senior cultural heritage officer in my own community, where looking after cultural sites was being my main position, added in governance with local land council at that time. And I'm still there, which is a bit of a nightmare at times. But when we seen this skull, we arrived on the site, we knew immediately that it was one of ours. It was simply by the square eye sockets alone that differentiated that skull from any other skull. So we requested the service that day and the police force to build a spearhead in front of that skull on the beach, of which many boulders were put down because we feared that during the May season, high seas may have sucked that body straight out of the dune system back out into the ocean. And over the next 6 weeks, we had several meetings with community on what should we do about this skull out at Macaulay's Beach. And it was determined then that we would examine that body, examine the perimeters, and then return it to the ground some 60 metres back from the dune system. It was during those first 6 days that some very amazing spiritual events occurred. And it is spirit that exposed this body because he was talking from the grave. On the sixth day when we arrived at the body, I was totally amazed that it was a male, that he was buried in a ceremony position with many grave goods, and the skeleton was complete. It meant every finger joint and body was of his body was there, and it was a male. But prior to that, if I go back to March, that occurred in May. But in March, as I walked away from the site, I said to my coordinator at the time and another Aboriginal sites officer, I wonder if he is carrying a bag. I only viewed a skull. I knew it was one of ours, but never before had I determined its gender, whether it was male or female. And never before had I raised the prospect that it was carrying a bag. I'll get back to the bag shortly as to the significance of that bag. So, over the next 6 weeks when the body was out of the ground, they wanted to take it to Sydney to examine it, and we refused that because other skeletal remains were never returned. So the body was examined over at the university. And during that period, it was determined the body was some 6,000 years old. But at the same time, the head of the Aboriginal Cultural Heritage Unit, Bill Lord, was pressing on me to put the body back in the ground. It was a matter of urgency for him because his children had become ill once that body was exhumed. The flowers in his garden and the grass in his yard had died during that period. He is a strong Aboriginal man, but this was affecting him spiritually whilst the body was out of the ground. So we pushed to get that body back as soon as we could back into the ground. I have goosebumps talking about this because this is real. This is real to me. On the very day the body did come out of the ground, Also, when I arrived home, my partner at that time, I had a two-day-old grandson in the next room. And my partner said, "Dutch, get in here. There is an owl in the bedroom." I came into the bedroom, and on the bed rail, there was my totem, the Dunuch, was sitting on the bed rail. And it alarmed me greatly as to why my totem was in my house, especially on the days that the body came out of the ground. So it was my ancestors calling to me through the appearance of my totem that something is wrong out here. And we felt, let's get this back in the ground, which we did as soon as possible. I invited elders out there and the 8 Aboriginal sites officers that I had worked with us during that period to return the body to the ground. And then 2 of my family stayed on site to guard against grave robbers because it had become so well known what was occurring at Sandon Point at that time. And so they stayed on site where we started the regeneration process to try and hide where we hid the body. That was in July. In August, we had the biggest floods that this region had ever experienced. And all around that area, except for where the Tent Embassy now resides, was underwater. And we felt that through that examination, the excavation and all the hullabaloo around it, that the site had been given the appropriate safety through the national parks is upgrading the significance of the site and what was at that particular area. But that never occurred because some 2 years later, a friend of mine, Gary, who I seen here earlier, informed me of a decision by a local government that there was now a developer on the site with a known burial ground on it, and that he had intentions to develop something similar to Bondi Beach. And I was absolutely outraged at how could this occur when laws are in place to protect our heritage, and yet we had a failure by the authorities at that time to redefine the site and to give it the appropriate safety protection that it was should have got. But that did not occur. We had a government agency flaunt the law. Sydney Water owned the site. They sold the site to a developer. This is where I have issues with land rights, that under Section 36 of the Act, if we lodge a land claim, is every other man and their dog can also lodge a land claim. And if it's needed for an essential public purpose, then we fail with that claim. So if government agencies no longer have use for Crown land, that land should be returned to the Crown and not used as a revenue raiser for that company. And it's one of the amendments that I've fought so hard for with land rights is there's so much government land being offloaded that it should be returned to land rights, and we should have an opportunity to put a claim on that because it no longer is an essential public purpose. When I found out, I approached the local government and said, "Why is this occurring? Why are you even considering this development when you know there is a 6,000-year-old man in the ground out there with grave goods? You also know from our investigations at the time that there were 7 other bodies removed from that site, including an 8-year-old girl. You're fully aware that it is a strong burial site for our mob. It is a significant meeting place, major hunting ground, with not just freshwater feeds, but saltwater. And that's who we are. We are Gadu. We are saltwater, all up and down this coast. And I am over people disrespecting our intelligence on what our elders told us about areas. Old campgrounds that we camped at, hunting grounds, fishing grounds, even taboo sites, we knew that those areas, you couldn't go there. That's either a woman's place or the Doolagar over there, the Bigfoot, you know, or the Willanta gang, the little hairy man, he there. You know, we these stories we known from children, from our elders. And it frustrates me. Fully does that I gave up my life to stop this desecration of ancient burial grounds. I put all of my efforts and all of my knowledge into campaigning against the failure of these agencies to protect what is ours. I'm over this that relics belong to the Crown. Here is a 6,000-year-old body with 6,000-year-old relics buried with it. Here is evidence of who we are. Yet we had to fight for the last 11 years. Some 230 judgments later, we are still fighting developers, local government, and even the statutory authorities that have a right to protect our interests are failing in their jobs. There's more, and what I found even more alarming, is Section 90, you have Section 14 of the National Parks and Wildlife Act, is very clear. Protect and preserve Aboriginal culture and heritage. Then you have Section 87 that says, oh, it's okay to go and explore these areas. And then we have Section 90 that says, well, now we can smash these areas up. You know, as the law contradicts itself in white man's world, totally contradicts itself. It's about the most destructive race of people that I've had the pleasure of meeting, truly. Truly most destructive mob. You have no respect for country whatsoever. That feeds you. When we say mother, that's the mother's tit. Yet you don't see it. You don't see what we see. You don't feel what we feel. I grew up on an Aboriginal settlement, La Perouse and Kermitage. And I was safe in that environment. Then Mum was moved out, public housing, into the suburbs. And I never experienced so much racism in my life. The first two, 3 weeks, in a new area, we fought every migrant in the neighbourhood. You know, and that was ridiculous that we were put in that environment. Then I tried to get an education, and all I was told at school was that you will never be educated, boy. You're not smart enough. You know? But Mum, my grandmum, my great-grandmum, were all fighters. I think that's what's in my blood, is the fact that they were quite literate too and educated. And they wrote books of our families, our history in Victoria, our history here in New South Wales, is who we are. Michael, you work with my mother's brother, Uncle Isaac Cruz. Is that's the family that I come from, is that we fight for social justice. But on top of that, there needs to be economic justice because our people are so suppressed. Out here at Sandon Point, I wanted to remind these people is, hello, this is an ancestor of ours. Hello, if I desecrate your cemeteries, I'm put in jail. I'm charged, you know, for being such a callous, you know, disrespectful person. Yet it's okay to come and smash up ancient burial grounds. And we must look at that because all these headlands, us Gadu, we know our bodies are there in those dune systems, in those riverways, you know, around those lagoons, in those hollows of trees and caves. We know they're there. 30 years we're told not to visit. And yet with progressive development, this need for ocean views, this killing of trees in order to get that view, which I find is outrageous, Yes, I'm a tree hugger. I love trees. But I think that's my nature. I'm talking about the trees. So in November, as I said with Gary when he informed me, we went to a meeting to council. I spoke to caucus. I said, you really need to reconsider your position. You know what's out there. But they went ahead anyways that night and agreed to the development. Well, we did get a stay of order until February. But what we did, we went back to community. We took it to community and we declared the site a sacred Aboriginal site. And we had a unanimous decision of our land council to go down that path. As soon as we declared it, we notified every agency that had a stakeholder in that site that this is now a declared Aboriginal site and you will now speak to us and you will now tell us what's going on. And we want to get to the bottom of this as to how land with an ancient burial site was sold in the first instance, why an area that had significant heritage listing was devalued and it was delisted as a heritage site, why the Heritage Council at that time and the Department of Aboriginal Affairs, who had a responsibility to intervene immediately because this was a burial site, failed to perform their duties at that time, why the National Parks and Wildlife Service brought in people from other country to sign off on something that was on our country. Is that, you know, would have caused war, blood war, you know, under our law, but it's these white man's laws that are causing divisions amongst our people. Now, we have uncles and aunties in each of our community that may not have certain knowledge in that. We respect that. But if they don't have knowledge of certain things, they shouldn't intervene and say, you know, well, that's not important. If that's where people in, within our own groups are talking out of order and out of place. And that's what Mike was saying earlier, how we've been trained to be as similar as white men. And our nature is becoming very much the same as similar. Well, I've seen some very nasty actions amongst our own people. It's things that we never seen as children, things we would never even think of, is occurring today where we have what I would call the UPNAS, the Uptown Niggers Association. Yeah. Is the collar and ties that forget where they come from. They got good education that we thought that would be of value to us in our endeavours to address this social imbalance. So my occupation is Sandon Point, and the reason I keep going back to court, they'll accept my affidavits, but they won't put me on the stand. They're scared to hear what I have to say about that country. This is what I find is ridiculous in law. You can present an affidavit and go back year after year, as I have on some 30 cases, where not once I have been called to bear testimony to my statement. It's just their way of not asking the relevant questions or having me ask them while I'm on the stand. That's really what my campaign has been about, is that stop disrespecting our heritage. Here is an ancient body in situ that we put back in the ground. It's clear evidence to everybody around here how old our heritage is. Very clear. Is why haven't we control of our heritage? We must have that control. That's what's eroding our communities. We have become reliant on the easy life, the electricity, the running water, the flushing toilet. But it's like Michael says, if we're truly going to mount a sovereignty challenge, is we need to remove ourselves from these comforts. We need to truly look at it from our perspective. We need to get away from the preserved foods. I was starkly alarmed in 1994 by the Aboriginal Health Journal. You know, that since 1967, we have had the biggest increase in heart disease, diabetes, blood disorders, you know, and it's all has come from preserved foods. So that's the legacy that the white people has left on us. It's actually killing our people more than what happened during the mission days. We're seeing more of it today, and we're seeing more disrespect towards our people, and the intervention is just a clear example of the disrespect that's out there. I see laws created like the Northern Territory Land Rights Act, like the New South Wales Land Rights Act, which are forms of compensation. How do you compensate for 200 years of turmoil, grief and aggression? You think that 15 years is going to compensate for 200 years of that sort of treatment of our people? The taps need to be turned back on. Funding needs to be transparent out there. It's not hidden under some other guise like Faxia. We don't know how much money is going into Aboriginal affairs. We don't even know where it's going. But when they withdraw it, as Johnny Howard did, and then blamed us for the conditions that our homes fell into, the only blame can be is that they failed to maintain the compensation. Our people are intelligent enough today, and I see it, the intelligence in our mob. An educated black fellow is dangerous, and that's the reality of it. Yeah, and that's what scares the white man. So we need more black lawyers, but we need to come together, we need to unify, because that's the only way we're going to win this debate. It's the only way we're going to get to the truth. Now, the three wiser statements of my Uncle Gabu, and I live with them daily. His time is the essence. Patience, virtue, but the best is yet to come. Thank you. I am quick.
They still.
What was the significance of the bag? The bag that was with the body?
It contained the great goods of what you would call a clever man. They have different names around areas. Here he's known as Kuraji. I know in other areas he's known as Featherfoot or Karachi. They've got Bagheen. There's several different names for that person. Not just man, we have clever women too. So what was in that bag? One object I can tell you, there was an 8-inch needle. That was made from a snapper bone. So it was amazing the intelligence on the site. But the day they started scraping the ground was the very day we was burying Uncle Gabriel. He was 93 years old. He was our most senior lawman. He came on country and camped with us for 18 months. Me and Karen took him home, remember? We took him back down to Wallaka, and some 6 weeks later he passed away. He knew it was time to go home, as many of our elders do. They know it's time to go home. They know their time's up soon. And I've seen that many times over with our mob. And I've had a mob with the same experience. But on the very day we asked developers, please don't dig up the ground today out of respect to Uncle Gabu. And they tore the ground up whilst we were burying it. And in amongst that, what we told them, Uncle Reuben said, that area has a very ancient tool site, and they didn't find it through their archaeological examinations. But on the very day the blades went in the ground, they hit the biggest tool site on the whole South Coast. Because the grass, the axes and spear blades and that were hanging off the grass like grapes on a vine. That's how thick the number of artefacts were. When we got Peter Hiscock, the rock expert in this country, to come to the site, they wouldn't allow him on the site. But his own determinations, he determined there was over 20 million samples in that particular site. So there was an intelligence that was lost. They buried it over and they built Millionaire's Row on top of it.
Yeah, can I just say,
to say, Dutch, I'm absolutely amazed at your modesty here today. You're not usually known for your modesty.
Right, don't go there. Oh, jeez.
The thing is, can I just take it back to the remains that were found out there? Because I know Dutch mentioned, you know, the struggles we had out there, but when it come to the what to do with remains and the reinterment of the remains, we actually had, because I was there with you, Dutch.
That's right.
And we actually had huge problems. You got no idea the kinds of things, and I think this is what sovereignty should be about, is not allowing this sort of crap to happen. Because we had, I might just stand up for the
please.
Yeah, we had to.
You have one.
Yeah, we had to negotiate with Wollongong City Council because, first of all, they wanted the remains reinterred at the designated site for repatriated remains at Wendy.
That's right.
And we had to follow
that. We said we can't retake him from country. He has to go back on country.
We had needed to reinter that old man in his ceremonial position. Right now, we also had to negotiate with the archaeologists. We had archaeologists from Sydney University and from Wollongong University. The lady from Wollongong University was really very good with us, wasn't she? Because she gave us really sound advice on what not to let happen, like not to let DNA testing occur because it would destroy.
Yeah.
So and the remains were intact. So we couldn't allow that. We could have carbon dating that didn't destroy. And not to let Sydney University have it because we would probably not get the remains back.
Yeah.
So, but nevertheless, we had all these negotiations with Sydney University as well. And with Wollongong University, we had to negotiate with National Parks and Wildlife, who under the 1983 New South Wales Land Rights Act had dominion over all of our cultural stuff, right? So so we had to negotiate with them, and what the hell would they know about it? We had to negotiate with Sydney Water, would you believe it, because apparently they own the ocean at the shoreline. Please explain, to quote an infamous person. We had to negotiate with Telstra. Why? There's nothing out there. But we had the sneaky feeling later that the later on Stockland's development was already in train at the time, and they had Telstra in the loop there. We also had to negotiate with the Thurool and Bulleye Surf Clubs, the Northern Illawarra Residents Action Group. This is so we could exercise our sovereign right to reinter the remains in situ. Okay. This man has sat for 12 years on that site in all sorts of crap weather. No electricity.
No hot water.
And I love him to
No bits. Flushing toilet.
And you see, that's why I said he was modest. Because he didn't say anything.
Might I say I love the old life, is that living on the beach, living the way we grew up, you know, that's not too hard to return to. May I give my strength, you know, to all those embassies popping up.
Yeah.
They've been around for... Yeah. Right? We've got to look at that. Everything in everyday affairs came out of that action in Canberra 40 years ago. And it was my... That's what gave me strength, because I actually went and spoke to Isabel out of Cockatoo not long after Cathy Freeman won that race when we moved on to Cockatoo. And we actually spoke about... Because this occurred around the same time. I came to get action from Victoria Park, from Canberra Embassy, from Cockatoo Island, and we performed ceremony. The day before at Wampara with the reawakening of the serpent. We put the serpent across the site. So on the 17th of December, the site was established. On Boxing Day, we converted it to an embassy. to see what our claims were with the site, and we've been there ever since.
Yeah, yeah.
So in that, some 230-plus judgments later, shows we're serious about our heritage.